3 Nephi chapter 24, and this chapter he quotes from Malachi, and he now talks most clearly about the very last days and the days right before he comes, and he says that he will send his messenger to prepare the way, and then when the way has been prepared, then he will appear and come into the temple. And then he asks in the second verse, but who may abide the day of his coming? And who shall stand when he appeareth? So now obviously he's saying, who will be the my true followers? Who will be the ones that I will say are my people? And there then he goes on to explain it. In the he then says in the next several verses that he is the refiner. And that that you need to be refined. And so those who will be his are those who are refined and purified. And that means that they will go through afflictions, and they will have problems, and they will be condemned of others. And as you'll see later on in this, he explains that these are the ones that are put down. These are the ones that are lowly in the church and so forth. But you're to expect that. Those who will see him at the last day and be his at the last day, he will lift up. He has said that in other places, but we begin to feel that here because he's saying, you are the ones that I am putting you through the furnace of affliction, and I am refining you. And that's what he is saying. But he's saying to you in verse 5 that those that claim to be his, he will give you a swift judgment and he will put you off. And notice that he calls some of them false swears, meaning that you swear to follow him, you claim that you follow him, but you do not. But you oppress the hireling in your wages. What does that mean, to oppress your hireling in your wages? It means that you want to be lifted up, and you want to give the person who works for you as little as possible. Isn't that the ones that are lifted up in our society today? Aren't those the ones that are made the leaders of the church, those who make the large amount and the people who work for them make the least? In their society, we form a society where all can share, and that we're trying to lift all up to be equal unto us in our, if you want, in our economic stature. But no, the drive and the desire of the business that is supported by the Mormon church is that the leaders of that are put up on a pedestal, and the business leaders do receive the extra. Those who manage even just run the investment funds or whatever to manage money, they're the ones who receive. And and the focus on the church is to uphold those and not to find out how to take those who are the wage earner to have just as much. Now again, this is going to be further explained here, but that is the thing. It's very much talking about our day, focusing on our day, and saying that it's your desire for the Babylonian society that upholds any what the business leaders, the salesmen, the lawyers, all these make all the money, but the one who is working for wages or really producing, he is put down, and he will. You don't create Zion. Zion's where we all have this, and everyone works for the benefit of others, and it doesn't mean that we have a communist society. It means each man works on his stewardship, but obviously he wants to share what he has with another man to help him out, and we're not concerned with taxes and building up businesses and building up all these shrines of Babylonian business. We're concerned with building a happy society where all the others are taken care of. And in that kind of a society, you're not concerned, in a Zion society, you're not concerned that you have two pair of clothes or that you have a better-looking car or that you're known as one of the rich men or that you have a title or a position in the church. But this is what he's saying. And again, that you're not trying to take the widows and the fatherless and truly give them an equal state and an equal chance. This verse 5 is so powerful against us today. We don't have a place or a land that we've created. We call Zion that the church could well easily afford to buy, and then we build buildings there, and we take the fatherless and the widows, and we give them actually a small homestead there. Give it to them. Don't require taxes of them. Don't require them to do it. Just require them to take care of themselves, and then working together, they can school their children. They can be with their family all day, and they can have the same blessings that everyone has. And again, I feel impressed that even in that society, if we were homeschooling or if we were schooling with others, then they would be having the same chance. We'd be preparing the materials for them to teach their own children. And those widows and the fatherless or the people who do not have a father in their family, they would still be taken care of and have every opportunity to raise their children in the same manner. But we do not form that kind of society. And why? Because we do not believe in the Lord, and we do not go to Him and have Him govern the church today or govern our personal lives. And he goes on to explain it more and says that you have gone away from my ordinances. What are His ordinances? Again, we say, oh, we have all the saving ordinances. We baptize and we do all that. What is an ordinance? An ordinance is a covenant. Well, I'm in verse 7, by the way. Where is a covenant, and in this covenant, we covenant to come unto the Lord, let Him govern things, do what He wants in our personal life, and when He tells us to take care of the poor, we take care of the poor, and we do it in His way, and if we have to be poor with Him, then that's fine with us. We do what the Lord says, and that's what we do in our ordinances, but we don't believe in those covenants. We don't believe that the ordinances are coming. We just believe that we go out and do the covenant. And so therefore he said that's why it says that you have not kept them. It's not kept them, it would not the doing of them, it's keeping them, meaning he's talking about the covenant. You have not kept that covenant. Then he goes on and says, so therefore return unto me, and I will return unto you. And he says, but you say, wherein shall we return? Now this is what you're saying. Will a man rob God? And then he says, yet ye have robbed me. And then he says, what do you say? You say, wherein have we robbed thee? In tithes and offerings? See, that's where we're getting, I mean, he says, wherein have you robbed me? And then he says, in tithes and offerings. And they say, but you say, we're giving all our tithes and offerings. And he says, ye are cursed, for ye have robbed me, even this whole nation. And it wasn't that you were not paying your tithes and offerings. He then says, bring all the tithes into the storehouse. It means, what do you use the tithes on? You use them to build your big office building, to fly all around and see everybody, to have your all your monuments at places like Nauvoo, support a big university like BYU, do all these other great things, go out and do all your missionary work so that you can build up the church, and you can do all these things so that you can say how wonderful it is. But do you take care of the poor? Has he not said over and over again that you're to take care of the poor? And so he says, quit spending all those tithes and taking unrighteous dominion and usurping the power and authority over all these tithes and offerings. Bring these tithes unto me. Bring them into my storehouse to take care of the poor. But you don't do that. No, you use them to build up your fancy temples and everything to make it show everybody what a wonderful big church you are and to have your own glories and so forth. But not to take care of the Lord's poor. And he said, if you would do that, if you would bring your tithes into me and bring them unto the storehouse where I can then, as he say, give meat to my house, who is his house, his poor, if you would do that, then he would pour out a blessing on you, and you'd find out that if you thought you wanted riches before, you would have riches beyond rich. But your focus has got to be on taking care of the poor and bringing up the fatherless and the hirelings and the widows. But that is not where your focus is at. And again, in verses 10 through 12, he repeats what he would do for you, but you don't have that now. You seek off into the world. You have to go out into the Babylonian society to seek your riches because you don't want him. You don't want him to come unto you. You don't want to return to him and have him be in charge of your government, your economy, and everything else. You want to go away from it. And he's telling you, but if you would accept him as your Lord and as your governor, as your provider and your protector, he would make you an ensign of the nations. And that's what he will do. As he said in the previous chapters, when he gathered you to Zion and he built the new Jerusalem, you will be an ensign to the world. Things will be where, when their terror is filling this world, there will be that safe place called Zion, who will be the Lord's place, and they will have plenty, and their cities will be beautiful. And everything will prosper there, because why? They turn to the Lord, and anyone that would turn to the Lord can have the same thing. And he said that your words have been stout against me. And then when he says he accuses you of that, and you say, "What have we spoken against thee?" And it, and he says that it is that you have said, "It is vain to serve the Lord. Why should we serve the Lord? What does it profit that we have kept his ordinances and that we have walked mournfully before him?" Meaning that it hasn't profited anything, that because you go, you see, to you, all you have done is kept the ordinances. Meaning that you have done the ordinances, and by doing the ordinances, you don't find any profit in this. So therefore, off to the side, you have to create your businesses, and you have to go out and do all this, so that you can have that, have your profit. And then it says, see, it hasn't paid off to us and ours. We haven't prospered like he said when we walk mournfully before him. Mournfully meaning that instead of being humble before him, when you do his work or when you do your ordinances or your church work or your tithe or whatever it is you feel that you do for the Lord, you do it mournfully, meaning that you have to do this and, oh, I have to go do that. And you walk around and then you uphold the others who did it. Oh, look what great men these are because they are working so hard for you. And see, these always make it sound like it's such a great sacrifice and it's so hard for them to do that. See, they always are talking of mourning, of how in their sound is a mourning for having to have served and did all this work for you, the people. Notice your leaders say, "You, the people, for you." They didn't do it for the Lord. They didn't do it so that the Lord would perfect them. They did it for you. And so, therefore, what did it profit? Well, therefore, they want to be the business leaders, and they want to be all the leaders, and they can have all the profit. And then it says in verse 15 that now we call the proud happy. Meaning who the ones that are all lifted up. They're made the church leaders, and they're made the business leaders, and they're all the leaders of this Mormon community. They're the happy ones because they're proud and they're lifted up. And that's what you say. He says they work wickedness. Those that work wickedness are set up. What wickedness? They support Babylon, but do they bring you under the Lord? No, they bring you under them, and they bring you under the church, and they build up their buildings, and they build up the kingdom to support them, and they're the ones that maintain riches and the glory of men and the power and the authority. And they're the ones that are set up again. They do wickedly. Why is it wickedness? The wickedness is that they do not send you unto the Lord. You are to be sent to the Lord. You're to be taught how to serve the Lord and worship the Lord, not them. And anything that diverts you from serving the Lord is wickedness, and that is their wickedness. And it says that they tempt God, are even delivered. Meaning they claim that these that are doing this wonderful work, they say, look at this wonderful church we built. Look at all these people we have brought in. Look at all our temples and so forth. Look at our work. See, they're not claiming this is the Lord's work. In their hearts, they want the glory. They want to say to receive all this glory and say it's their work. And this is the tempting of God because they're saying, God, look at all this church. Look at all these people we brought in. And so they're trying to tempt him, saying, receive this as your work, Lord. Receive this as your church. See, they tempt him instead of coming and returning to him and doing his work his way and humbly walking before him. They do it and tempt him and say, here, take this. But then he says, they that feared the Lord spake one to another. But it says that they hearkened to the Lord. They did not. They feared the Lord. They did not fear all these leaders of the church. They did not fear other men. They did not fear the church. They did not fear anything but the government. They feared the Lord. But when they did, they were suppressed and they were put down. But he says, they are the ones that are written in the book of remembrance, not those who are the lofty and the proud and that build up all these kingdoms in their own way, build up the kingdom of the church in their own way. These were the ones who will be in the book of remembrance. For again, they feared the Lord, and they fought upon his name. When they thought in their daily lives, when they did things, they thought of the Lord's name. And they did what the Lord wanted, and when they even did any church work, if you call it that or anything, they did it truthfully unto the Lord, and they thought, what does the Lord want in this? Their thoughts were on the Lord. And he says, they shall be mine. Finally answering the question that said, Who will abide the day of his coming? Who will stand when he appeareth? They are the ones. They are his people, not those who have ran around who are the leaders of the church and claimed all this stuff. They will not be. At the end of verse 17, he says that that he is looking for the one who serves him. And so he repeats in the last verse that he will determine between the man that serveth God and him that serveth him not. That's to finally make his last point, in case it wasn't clear, that the thing that will get you into heaven or make you be with him at the last day is serving God. Do you serve the Lord Jesus Christ, or do you serve the church, or do you serve your own power and your own self? But the point that is being clearly made there is that those who are proud and loft themselves up at the top of the church and claim, look at us, we are the ones serving the Lord, he will then at the last day come and say, no, you are not the ones that have served the Lord. The ones that have served the Lord are the ones that have been fearful to me and have came unto me.